We made this.
Hello and welcome to We Buy Records. I'm Paul Field and I'm joined as ever by Mr. Tim Scullion.
We should change up the intro somehow. I'll come up with some other ideas of what you can say, Paul.
Yeah, but for now, Tim, that's the intro.
That's me and that is the intro. Hi, Paul.
How are you?
I'm very, very, very well.
Have we had any letters this week, Tim?
We've got a lot of letters. I find it really gratifying to know where our listeners are and what they're up to and stuff. Like, for some reason, we've got lots of listeners at the moment in Ireland.
Yes, I get this daily chart thing, and it was like, oh, this week you are overall number 6 in Ireland, and your episode is number 4. I'm like, that was 2 weeks ago, so I've no idea how it works.
If you are Irish, or at the very least living in Ireland, basically, if you have an IP address in Ireland, can you please... present yourself at reception and tell us why you... I mean, it's great, don't get me wrong, but who are you?
We're a global podcast, Tim. We have listeners all over the world now.
Well, we had a letter from...
I haven't shown you the listener map. We have a listener...
We've got a listener map?
Yeah, Myanmar is our most obscure listener.
Oh, that's good. If you're listening from Myanmar, could you...
Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know.
Anyway, but you know where I mean.
I do. It'll always be Burma to me.
That's mad.
We've got one listener who listens, the last episode he listened to while he should be doing his history revision. So thanks, Billy Edwards, for letting us know. If your grades start dropping, could you stop listening to us, if that's all right? So the point of that is, it's nice that we have all ages, because I assume that Billy Edwards, as he's doing his history revision, is not an old record man.
No, it's great that we're not, everyone who listens is an old record man. So
they mostly are.
Sadly, mostly are, yes.
So if you're Irish or under 25, do let us know that you're listening.
Friend of the show, Graham Needham, he completed the challenge we set.
The CD challenge.
CD challenge.
So for the listeners with short attention spans or poor memories, could you remind us what that was?
So Mute Records put out a Czech CD of Right Said Fred's first album with the Mute logo and details on, because I think they were the only record company there who had an office at the time, and it just made sense for them to help out and put it out. Paul A. Taylor from Mute had a copy, had it stolen.
It was one of his prized possessions.
One of his prized possessions, yeah. And we put out the call to see if our listeners could find a copy, and Graham has delivered.
And it only took, 2 weeks or something from putting the call out?
Podcast magic.
It is podcast
magic. More podcast magic. BBC Records vinyl. Paul Weller. Ghostbox. He's got his record. Yes, it happened. He's got his record. He's been in touch. So absolutely brilliant. Made up for him.
Paul, more housekeeping. My God, our PVC heavy plastic sleeves chat has lit up the internet.
Hasn't it just?
Not entirely in a good way.
Oneness has been in touch to say even the newer version. So he had a Record Store Day release in one of those heavy PVC sleeves, and I think there must have been a hype sticker on it. It completely gunked it up, and then it went all into the record next to it as well.
Yeah. Now, some listeners are adamant that there is no problem, and to them I say, fair play. If you have those sleeves and they've not caused an issue, that's brilliant. I don't, we don't...
We're not looking for problems, no.
We don't want them to have messed up records, but, it's happened to us and listeners enough times that it clearly is a problem for some people.
Yep.
But I think fantastic if you've been lucky. You must live in the exact right climate wherever you are, in Huddersfield or whatever. That climate you live in, bang on.
You know, you were talking about empty boxes, or I was...
Yes.
We have had a couple of listener replies to say that they've had empty boxes. Fetus.
Yes. So it turns out that fetus, also known as scraping fetus off the wheel, it's a Jim Thirlwell's weird industrial noise weird project, seems to have loads of fans among our listeners. Because I think about 3 people have got in touch to say,
three
I got the
people,
fetus
yeah.
box set.
So comes with a T-shirt.
Empty box with a T-shirt designed to hold, I think, a series of fetus 12 inches. But big, big hit among our listeners for some reason.
And then Halloween.
Yeah. So I bought this.
I bought this. I know several of our listeners bought this or attempted to.
So this was advertised on Amazon as Halloween soundtrack box set. And it had a pre-release price, I believe, of $4.99. And I thought, ooh.
Miss Price. I'll have some of that.
Put my order in there. And what turned up?
An empty box.
An empty box. Which, again, was designed to fit maybe three volumes of the box
set. But it was supposed to have come with at least one volume, I think.
Yeah,
I think it was.
Yeah. It was advertised as having a record in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Amazon got a lot of returns on that.
I cancelled in time.
No, mine did turn up. And I was like, well, this feels light. And yeah, had nothing in it. It's a bit of fun, isn't it? Record collecting, it's a gamble, you see. On the subject of pre-ordering something, there's a smooth link there, Paul, because that last bit was about pre-ordering the Halloween box set. And regular listener Stephen Norgate has been in touch, following on from some Ghost Box chat about whether or not people should have pre-ordered and whether they still would have got their Ghost Box Paul Weller item. He writes to say that the Ghost Box debacle wasn't his worst pre-order nightmare, not by a long way. He writes, in 2004, I pre-ordered the Aphex Twin Analord faux leather 12-inch record binder with Analord 10 12-inch included from Reflex Records. I received my order number and waited patiently with all my friends and the rest of the fans. After a long delay, in January 2005, Reflex Records started mailing out the packages, saying they'd had some problems with the release and some expired credit cards from the pre-orders. I guess because it had taken them so long. Oh dear. They never contacted me to say that there'd been any problem with my card. Eventually, it became clear that I was not getting my order fulfilled. All my friends had theirs. How many friends of his are into Aphex Twin? All my friends had theirs, but mine never arrived. This isn't the worst part. I then found in June 2005 that they were sending out the final binders to the last few people who were left out of the original shipment. I still didn't get mine. That's still not the worst part, Paul. The final 20 orders received a copy of the unreleased Analog Bubble Bath 5. So the accepted narrative now is that everyone got theirs in the end and some got a sweet, desirable white label. I got nothing.
Ouch. Did he get his money back? Or they didn't take money in the first place?
Well, he then bought all 11 12 inches in the series, but no binder. Now, you can buy the binder for about 850 quid with all the 12 inches in it that he already has. He says, I emailed Reflex many times throughout all of this. By the way, in case you were wondering, he was in touch with them.
He would have been.
And they never replied to me.
Ooh. And he still went on and bought another 11 12 inches.
And he had a pre-order number. Do you know what I mean? So he should have been in that allocation of stuff. He had his number. After these
final... I'd be knocking on their door at that point.
You would, but you do go above and beyond. after the final 20 shipments, I changed tack and I sent them a nice postcard. This, interestingly, elicited an email. The person replying said that he would ask the boss if there was going to be any more. Deep breath. Now, one, he says, there was no recognition that they messed up. And two, of course there were no more. I was asking where mine was, not for an additional one. And that was that. Reflex was notoriously flaky, but the salt in the wound was that some people got a super special sorry in the form of AB5, and I never even got an email to say what actually went wrong.
That's pretty grim, isn't it?
It really sucks.
I would not be happy with that. If I had a pre-order number, I'd have been on the phone to them constantly until I got it sorted.
We could do a magic podcast bit of magic. If we get all of our listeners to chip in, we can get up to that 850 quid and we'll buy him the set.
That's not going to happen.
I think there's one more little bit of housekeeping. I know the housekeeping's dragging on, but we are nearly there.
I've had an email here from Graham Nealon. I've only discovered your podcast a few weeks ago thanks to Paul on Twitter vaguely mentioning he was on one. As someone who doesn't collect vinyl at all, I went through all your back
your
episodes
face was
in
like,
a few
how
days.
How can that be possible?
Hearing people with deep knowledge talk about something with enthusiasm is always going to be interesting and entertaining. Melvin Bragg, hey, we've been compared to Melvin Bragg, I'm loving this, has made a career out of it in our time. I've learned things about cities, record shops and people because of this podcast. Beforehand, my only exposure to this world was through the Andrew Cartmell Vinyl Detective series of novels.
Popular novels.
Yep, big fan. And I admit to being slightly disappointed that there seem to be fewer gunfights and murders in the stories that we relate. Perhaps they only happen with jazz record collectors.
Do you know what's weird? Someone else has said that our podcast reminds them of a buddy cop movie, only without any jeopardy and no actual, you know, no violence or anything. So that's two people.
And someone else said it reminded them of Top Gear, but for records. Oh, you're not keen on. They're not. No, you're pulling a face now. No, you're not keen on that one.
Is this which iteration of Top Gear is this?
They didn't go into detail.
Is it sort of racist bullying down. First wave, or is it, you know, like cuddly Matt LeBlanc midway? I need to know.
Well, I'll find out for you. This is a lovely segue, though. You talk about books that have records in them.
Mm-hmm.
That Nick Hornby's book, High Fidelity.
Yep, read that.
It's been made into a TV show.
This sounds like news, Paul.
It is news, Tim. So, High Fidelity, the TV show, Tim, not the film.
So there's a new... What?
10 part, 30 minutes each, based on Nick Hornby's book.
British or... It must be
American. Oh. Yep, it's on Hulu.
It's on British hooky websites and apps.
The owner is now a woman.
Of the record shop?
Yep, Championship Vinyl is now being run by a woman, which is fantastic. And it's Zoe Kravitz as well, and she's brilliant.
I wonder if she faces the relentless stream of sexist assumption that Susan does in our record shop.
From the episodes I've seen so
then it's
far.
It's wildly inaccurate.
However, they do deal with that in one of the episodes. And it's the episode that people will want to look for, or the particular piece in the book and the film that everyone loves, is when they get offered that really valuable collection. That's episode 5.
Excellent.
Now, that
okay.
also deals with horrible record men who ignore women.
Good.
So that's the episode to look out for.
Needs to be in there. So wait, I mean, is it any good?
Well, I'm watching it almost like forensically looking at the shop and the interactions and how they deal with people. There are a few slight issues. Somebody brought in a crate of records and I could see there was a copy of Straight Outta Compton in there. Probably VG Plus was on the border mm-hmm. for the sleeve. But she only offered him $30 for the whole crate. That ain't a lot, is it? Without going through them properly and looking them up.
But that reflects what some record shops do.
Yes.
Quite accurately reflects what some record
Probably.
Shops do. Because, unfortunately, and we don't do this,
mm-hmm.
they do that. And if the person says, yeah, fine, okay, then they're laughing. If the person says, what, are you mental? Of course not. Aren't even going to look at them. Then they might be forced to look at them properly and offer more money.
Oh, okay. They price gun the records in the racks.
But what about condition and stuff?
I don't know what's going on. You just get scenes where they're going ka-chunk, 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 but the records are already in the racks and they're pulling them forward.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? You think they'd have someone on set that would say...
Saying that's mental.
Don't do that,
that's like,
or do that.
In
or,
a supermarket, they'd
yeah.
do that with beans. You'd get like
yeah.
a box of beans. Cha-chunk, cha-chunk, cha-chunk.
Yeah.
But it doesn't translate to second-hand records,
no.
does it?
No, it is and they were clearly used records in that rack.
That's it. I'm never watching this show.
There is a really good scene, though, where they talk about the ethics of selling Michael Jackson records. So that's worth looking out for. And he even has the retort to her. It says, you know, you're still listening to a rapper in a MAGA hat.
Oh, brilliant.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it has
good
yeah,
stuff in it.
Yeah. And there's a brilliant piece where there's a David Bowie record. The man who sold the world. There we go. I think it's 1971. Is it a misprinted copy where Tony Visconti's name has been misprinted? I think it might be.
Oh, I didn't even know about that.
Worth about £1,000.
Wow.
And one of those appears in the show and is part of a story. So there is this. There's proper stuff
yeah.
there. Yeah. However, 75% of it is a romantic drama.
Okay. Is it more drama than comedy?
Is it like light? It's
very
light
drama.
It's light romantic drama.
So you can watch it with someone who's not into records, and they can focus on the romantic drama.
I think it's not aimed at people
like,
who like.
Oh, look at that Straight Outta Compton record. Yes,
it's like not aimed at people who like records. I think that they are a part of the audience, but I think I can't see how they'd be your main audience, because that would be mainly old white dudes who have no interest in a young woman's romantic entanglements.
They might not. I don't know. Depends
Would
how
they?
Metropolitan.
I don't know. I just think it is a weird melding of me watching the record stuff and kind of only paying a mild interest into the actual characters
and
story.
Into the plot and the actual, Look at that rotating black thing in the background.
And their record player in the shop is rubbish. It's part, like a cheap part. It may have been part of Pioneer, I think it is, but it's part, you know, like a stacking hi-fi system.
Yeah,
it's like one of the top of one of those. I'm not having that. You wouldn't have that in a record shop, would you?
I don't feel that you would.
No. Anyway, it's
a
recommend.
It exists.
Yes.
That's what we're saying. This program does exist. Full stop. Nice.
Yes.
One. And are you going to stick with it to the end?
Well, I only got 4 episodes to go.
So you may as well.
Might as well, yeah. Listeners, if you have any favourite books, TV shows or films that feature vinyl or record shops, let us know your favourites. Let us know some we might miss, because I'm always keen to watch them. Tim, yeah?
Yeah, all right.
You have a record shop. You don't. No interest.
No, that would be lovely. That's a very good idea. From light, frivolous telly news, Paul.
Yep.
We skew a little bit more serious now.
Okay.
Kyle Devine has published via MIT Press a new book called Decomposed, The Political Ecology of Music.
Hmm.
Now, he has investigated and flown around the world and tried to get into factories and stuff to figure out what is the actual environmental cost of pressing up records and the alternatives too. And it looks like quite a nice investigation into the actual science of the factories pumping out vinyl records and making the plastic and, you know.
Is this the one that was picked up by The Guardian? Because
yes.
I saw this. Yeah.
Yes.
And funnily enough, we've had not one, but 2 listener requests asking us to deal with that very subject.
Ah, well then here we go.
Here you go.
So this is a little bit of some of his findings, and then we're going to get on to something else in a few moments. But first of all, I'll kind of give you a little basic flavour of what he's been up to and what he's found. So, according to his research, more than half of the PVC, or polyvinyl chloride, used by today's US record manufacturers comes from one place. It's the Thai Plastic and Chemicals Public Company Limited in Bangkok. PVC contains carcinogenic chemicals, and the operation produces toxic wastewater that this company has been known to pour into a local river.
Lovely.
Greenpeace says that the company has a history of environmental abuses going back to the early 90s, but it's not a new issue. During vinyl's original heyday, 70s, early 80s, the situation in America was no different. In the 70s, the K-Saw Century Corporation supplied about 20 million kilos of PVC a year to the US record industry, about 1/3 of the total annual amount used in the whole country, just for records.
Wow.
And, you know, like this Thai company, K-Saw Century was an illegal polluter. It eventually got slapped with a $4 million fine and a public apology for lying about exposing workers to toxic fumes, releasing toxic chemicals into the air, and dumping toxic wastewater down the drain. So presumably we should all stop listening to records and go streaming, right? Stop. Paul was going to agree with that stupid statement.
No, I wasn't.
No, you weren't, were you? So, digital media is physical media. It all exists in big things that require electricity, data farms, you know, storage centers and stuff. Those audio files that you listen to on Spotify, Paul, they rely on infrastructures of data storage, processing and transmission that have potentially higher greenhouse gas emissions than the petrochemical plastics used in the production of LPs.
Whoa!
The amount of energy required to stream one song is negligible. But the point is, we're now in a situation where everyone expects, millions and millions of people expect to be able to have instant access to billions of songs. They all have to be served up, ready, waiting on massive servers for anyone to listen to at the click of a button. So although the US recording industry is now using less plastic, it is producing more greenhouse gas emissions. Somewhere between 200 million and 350 million kilos a year after 2015, which is more than double the US industry's emissions profile at the height of vinyl.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm shocked.
I mean, what? Isn't that crazy? And obviously that's not going to get any better, because more and more and more stuff is in the cloud. More and more stuff is relying on
this podcast, in
always,
fact.
Oh, shit.
Mm.
Oh, Paul.
We're going to have to put the podcast out on vinyl.
On vinyl, that's the answer. Well, it's funny you should say that, because there might be light at the end of the tunnel, a group of 8 Dutch companies have come together to develop an environmentally friendly alternative production process for vinyl records. It's based on the injection molding principle instead of pressing the records. And they're also replacing PVC with a more environmentally friendly material. However, people that have listened to their discs have reported that they sound awful, feel wrong, and feel cheap. And that they've got a lot of background noise and are crap.
Oh.
So, Paul, would you accept worse sounding records to save the world?
Can I say no and not be hated?
No. Okay. You've just got to say yes.
Yes.
You know what the answer is really, though? Don't buy stupid, pointless 180-gram reissues. Buy secondhand records.
Recycle.
Sorted, job done. And also, by the way, 180-gram records are, by the fact that they have more vinyl in them, are worse as well. So we should abandon them and go back to 140, 120. Makes you think, doesn't it?
If any listeners have any thoughts on the environmental impact of vinyl records, please do get in touch.
Have any of you been kept up at night worrying about it?
I'm probably adding to the problem, Tim, because I've got into the bootleg market.
Oh, Paul.
Yeah.
What have you done?
I've had some records made of things that you can't find or impossible to buy. And friend of the show, James Yule, has given me a load of remixes, which I've had made into an album with his blessing.
It hasn't arrived yet.
Not arrived yet. I've seen the finished article, though, and we'll talk about them in more detail when they arrive on the next episode.
It would be funny if they were made out of this new, more environmentally friendly compound and they sound like shit. Paul, listeners of our last episode will recall that you've been on your holidays, and it was such an odyssey that it couldn't possibly fit into one episode, could it?
No. Last week's City Report was from Los Angeles. We also headed to a couple of other places, and this week we are going to have a short City Report on San Diego.
Now, does this contain one of the things that you teased last week of being even better than...
It does.
Okay.
But where we're going to start is Feel It Records, which is...
Feel It.
Feel It. Feel It. It. Records.
What's the it?
I don't know. That's what it's called. Been there twice now.
You didn't think to ask?
No. Well, I didn't. But we are going to have a little interview with the owner, Mark Allen, which we can hear now.
I've been here for 12 years. The shop is actually... Siesta Records was the name of the shop before, and I was working as a DJ. They told me in the end of 2007 they were going to shut it down because of the economy and the lack of interest, I guess, of people playing vinyl. So I couldn't see the stores closing, so I quickly called a friend, borrowed $1,000, went to the bar I was working at, took $600 out of the bank, wrote a check for the difference, and 45 minutes later I signed a 3-year lease. It's because I just didn't want to see the record store close down, so I tried to save it.
Wow, it's incredible. And how much stock did you inherit at that time?
Just the stuff in the white bins here, so maybe... just a couple thousand, but it was all stuff I said, you know, I can't afford to buy all this stuff from you guys, so take what you want and leave me what you don't want to deal with, because they didn't have money to move or get a storage or pay the landlord what was owed. So I had a little bit of house music that was left here, basically, and then I had my stuff that I brought in from my own collection. And so initially the store was mostly equal parts gallery, boutique, and record store, because no one was buying records. So I had to diversify, and I had a lot of friends that were doing consignment, so they could bring me their art. So I had local art on all the walls. I had local apparel, a hat line from the Bay Area, a local men's line for button-down shirts. I had jewelry, accessories, lots of things other than just records to kind of survive. And I also worked a night job on the weekends to get through with those first 10 years or so.
Now things are very different. Certainly in the UK, vinyl is hugely back. I mean, I'm guessing I've been around the record shops in San Diego. They seem really busy and buzzing. How is it now for you?
It's been good. It's been slowly. It's getting better every year. So I'm thankful. I hope the trend continues and I don't get stuck with the Beanie Babies of the music industry, where it's like, oh, no one's doing vinyl anymore. But I only see it growing every year, so I think it's a good thing.
And you have a good reputation as a shop that buys records. Do you? I mean, is it a struggle to get stuff? Are you out hunting, or do people bring stuff into you?
I don't have time to go hunting. Stuff just usually, like, these guys just right here brought stuff into me today. So usually that kind of keeps stock full of the new arrivals of the used stuff, and then I have a good relationship with distributors, labels, and artists to get the new stuff too.
And in terms of the records that you stock here, give us a kind of paint a picture for us and give us some highlights.
Well, originally it was, like I said, it was mostly electronic dance music, funk, and a little bit of disco, house, a little bit of drum and bass and jungle, that kind of stuff. But now it's mostly, I would say, rock, hip-hop, jazz, and we do have still carry a good bit of soul and also electronic music. We do have progressive house, tech house, down-tempo, jungle, that kind of stuff. So we do have a little bit of everything, because I never know who's going to walk in the door, especially if the people are tourists or they're traveling from abroad. They might be looking for something that other stores don't carry, because a lot of stores will be like, oh, go to Feel It. We don't carry that music. So I try to have a little bit of everything, world music, blues, everything. Yeah.
So have you had any like really incredible finds through the door that you've sold for really high prices?
Let me see what's on the wall right now. I have some cool stuff for sale, like this Two Shorts first album on vinyl right here. It's like $250 for that one. And then let me see what else I got around here. I got some cool stuff on the wall too. That Chelino Sanchez, I just got that one in. He's like a narco corrido, like singing about the drug culture in Sinaloa. He was actually killed after a show in Sinaloa, so that's kind of a rare record. That's like $250. But yeah, I think the rarest piece that I probably have is the Nirvana fully signed Nevermind up top.
Wow, how much does that go for?
I've seen it go for about $8,000 before.
Wow.
So yeah, that's kind of like the emergency fund. I guess if anything happens, I have that to fall back on.
Thank you, Mark.
Such a nice chap. It's the second time I've been into his shop. It's my favourite San Diego shop because it has a lot of dance records. There was a customer in there, actually. He let me do a little side deal with. He had some Depeche Mode records. He said, just buy them directly.
You told me about this.
Yeah.
Now, we've done that sort of once, and it did feel like we were idiots to do it, but it's also quite lovely.
You could see our overseas visitor, he didn't have anything of any Depeche records in there at the time, so we thought.
But the customer said, "Oh well, I've got one.
Yeah, I've got two. And I gave him $20, and he gave me the two. So I literally paid sort of trade price as
I
well.
I mean, you're killing that shop, by the way, by doing that.
No, he was such a nice guy, and we bought a stack of other records from him.
Good.
Thank you
and
so much.
And the goodwill
for that,
as well.
Yeah,
stuff
course.
Like that. It just feels really nice. And like, so someone came in to the shop the other day who he'd bought a record from us, and then he'd bought some new records from HMV. And he came back to us, and the HMV records were skidding on his turntable. And he popped back into us and he said, we bought these ones from HMV, but you guys were so, they were quite a young couple. He said, you guys were so nice to us last week in the shop when we bought these records from you, and you treated us so well that we thought we'd come and get your advice rather than go back to HMV, because we just think we'd much rather talk to you. And he wanted advice to see what we thought about why his new records were skipping and stuff. And
was it a Crosley?
Basically, it's an Ion.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
and so I explained to him, we've heard this before. For some people with cheap decks, new records don't track and they just skid across the vinyl. And it's not the first time that we've heard that. Back to America.
Back to San Diego, we head to Record City. This is a real institution in San Diego. It's a really long store. It goes way, way back. There is so much stock in there. The first time I was in there, I picked up a Depeche box set, which he sold me for about a third of its value. I was like complete shock.
Are all of these shops bigger than any British record shop, pretty much?
Record City, it is huge, but it looks like a normal storefront width-wise. It just goes back and back and back and back and back. There is everything in there. There is so much stock. You have to go to Record City. I mean, it's just, you know, it is an institution in San Diego. Everyone knows it. When I was there last time, I actually saw the next place we're going to talk about on the internet. But when I saw the outside of it, I thought, ooh. And it's called Folk Arts Record. And I thought,
oh, that doesn't sound like your kind of thing at all.
This is the place I sent you the photos of. This, even though I didn't buy anything...
For beard heads.
This may well be the best record shop I'd ever actually been inside myself. And for me to say that about a record shop I haven't bought anything in tells you how good it is.
But does that include pricing?
Yes.
Wow.
So on the wall, they had Rock and Pop. They had stuff that I would have bought if I didn't already own it. Catherine found Madonna, Erotica, promo album.
Oh, for $20.
$20. That's a really good price.
That's like a $50, $60. The promo, original American Mint promo of that album. It's got to be $50.
Surely. They had a huge selection of punk. They had a huge
That's why you're saying it's kind of the best shop. Because in terms of their stock and how organised it is. Because you showed me a photo and it had like, here's the massive krautrock section. Here's the massive section of like European prog. Here's the section of British original press prog. Here's the like synth pop.
Yeah, it was broken down more than
all,
that.
But and all full of records as well. Because often you get these. I remember looking in Music and Video Exchange in London. They'd have a million different subdivisions. So they have like just Factory Records, just Creation Records, just Vertigo, whatever. But they would have some 12-inch singles. You know, they would have three records in each section. But this is the same thing, but they actually have stuff in the section.
They had a huge section for Turkish psych, for Turkish prog. They had an African section, which was huge. They had walls and walls of jazz. I mean, when I posted pictures of this place, somebody said, there's my entire Discogs want list right there. Their new in section was huge. They had sections for things that I'd never seen before. For example, a Japanese experimental section. You don't see that every day. Musique concrète. Paul Kendall talked about that being his kind of genre in an earlier episode. I have never in all my travel seen a section marked.
And it was a decent size.
Yep. They had one for Moog, which I'm terrible pronouncing wrong, actually. But anyway.
It's supposed to be Moog. Robert Moog.
So, our listeners
would die.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they don't like... Because Feel It for me was the best shot because they had loads of 12-inch singles and it's full of dance music and that was what I was interested in. But the majority of our listeners aren't. And I would say that Folk Arts Records in San Diego is absolute paradise.
Are you sure the prices
Yeah, the prices
fair?
Were fair, yeah. Because I looked in the new in section
that's
and I could
the killer.
See stuff.
I've mentioned
we just talked
before.
About the Madonna promo.
Oh, yeah.
For
oh yes,
bucks.
Of course.
That was in there. The Depeche albums were like $10 and stuff, but we already had them all. It was good prices.
Because the number of times that I've had this conversation with people in the shop or with you or whatever, that if a shop's stock seems too good, it's because it's too expensive and it hasn't shifted, right? So it's doubly impressive for a shop to have good, interesting stuff at prices where you want to buy it, because if it's a price where you want to buy it, it's a price where anyone would want to buy it. So the turnover, in theory, is good. So how the hell can they maintain such interesting stock at sellable prices?
That I don't know. Is it advertising? Is it the way that the shop front's presented? Because the when you look at it from the outside, you just think, oof, that's full of old beard music. Or it's a specialist folk shop. Or it does not present externally what's going on internally. That's for sure. Because I was there. I didn't bother going in because I thought it just looked terrible from the outside. Never judge a record shop by its frontage.
That's true, actually. In fact, that's probably something that we can get the listeners in on, is that because record shops will either look amazing and it turns out it's like a ponced up bar pie shop with a little record thing. Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Those
kind of
mean,
thing.
Yeah.
Or it'll look like absolute shite and you'll come out with 10 Frank Zappa LPs that were £1 each.
Going to whisper a few more quickly. Vinyl Junkies, which is on Fern Street. Really nice neighbourhood record shops, a great dive bar opposite. They have an outdoor space out the back where you can go and have a little sit down. They have record decks in there where DJs can come and do little events. And they have a shed, which I didn't realise last time, out the back, full of all the cheap records.
Oh, my God.
And I was like,
was there anything decent in there?
Brand new sealed copy of Renegade Soundwaves, probably a robbery.
Really?
Which obviously there was no US audience for, so it was still in stock, and I think it was $4.
But was that an American pressing?
Yeah, it was on a label I've not even heard of before. It's still at home, still sealed.
Excellent.
Mr. Paul Kendall on the mix.
Oh, fantastic.
And just down the road from there is Ocean 97 Seafood, which is a really famous Mexican taco truck. $9. I had what they call the crazy tostada, okay, which was oysters, mussels, octopus, shrimp, dorado, wow. Top end seafood
from a
food truck. Most of the people in the queue were Mexican people with tattoos on their faces.
Nice, that's always a good sign.
Yep.
I don't mean not the tattoos, but I mean the indigenous people. Yeah,
everyone there was Mexican, apart from me and Catherine, who were kind of. We could see that we were getting like the what the fuck are these people doing
that's
in a
perfect.
Car park outside a DIY shop?
But so you'd heard of it?
Yeah, I'd heard about it, and that this place was amazing. And despite
like
me feeling a little bit, because, you know, these guys look pretty intimidating.
Well, the tattoos on your face are quite subtle, aren't they?
Yeah, so I don't have the teardrops for all the people I've murdered. Anyway, it was one of the best things I've ever eaten. Think about it, $9.
For all that.
For a huge thing. You don't get oysters when you're out at a food for seven quid, effectively.
Yeah, that is
but
quite
for
good.
A mountain of, like, ceviche. It was all raw. just with like lime juice and stuff on it. It was just,
oh my god,
oh, it was so good, so good.
And you hung out and chatted with the tattoo face Mexicans.
We spoke to a few of the natives. We always ingratiate ourselves. When we were in San Diego, the bar we went to was the dive bar. For breakfast, we went to the Mexican diner and nice. Got the eggs and avocado and stuff.
Plate special or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. My friend there tries to go to fancy places and I really hate it. And this time I put my foot down and said, look, we're not those people. We don't want to, $40 for a drink in a sky lounge.
Yeah. Boring.
We went to the $6, his five, six, seven shots in a glass dive bar, and it was amazing. As long as you had to listen to death metal, though.
Oh, how did you cope with that?
It was good. It was great. I was loving it. A couple of other quick mentions. Red Brontosaurus. It's a secondhand place that does pop punk, classic punk, you got hardcore, and even a section for yacht rock. Not for me, but it seemed busy enough and the locals seemed to like it. And then a shop I've been to before, M Theory, which is a fantastic shop, full of new and used records. Really good. Definitely worth a visit.
If someone's got a bit of time for an American holiday and they can only really kind of hit one city, they can just give, let's say they can have like 3 or 4 days. Would you say this is a place to...
If you lived in America, Tim, you would live in San Diego.
Okay. Not New York?
No. It's so chilled and it's not quite as bad as Portland, but which is a lot of long running jokes. But yeah, it's your kind of vibe. It's very brilliant. Relaxed. And compared to LA, it's just so much nicer.
Because even LA is considered to be relaxed compared to, say, New York. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's all relative.
It's all relative.
Yeah. But when you come out of LA and you hit San Diego, you're like, ah.
Okay.
We're going to end. Next week on Long Beach, where we're going to talk about a shop which has a section for Diamond de Galas.
Now, Paul, I asked on the Twitters, which is not the only way that you can interact with us. You can email us
at webuyrecordspod@gmail.com, and we strongly advise to use that method if possible.
Otherwise, we just lose.
We lost stuff again this week. Yeah. And then, like, suddenly before we come on air, I remembered some people had sent us some Twitter DMs as well.
Oh no.
So there's a third avenue.
Sorry, everybody.
Sorry.
So we asked on Twitter if you have any memorable decisions that you made relating to vinyl when perhaps you were drunk or under the influence or in some kind of poor state of mind. And we've had a lot of replies, Paul.
Oh yes.
So huge apologies if we don't mention yours. We had loads of great comments coming.
Some absolute belters.
But we can't go through all of them, unfortunately. But we love you all. Thank you ever so much. A London station on Twitter writes, I bought a pretty rare VHS and CD set of Queensryche's Operation Mindcrime. I didn't have a video recorder and I'm not that keen on Queensryche.
Perfect. Simon Tucker here says, I once spent a lot of pounds on a white label 12-inch of an At Ice Cream remix of LaRue. I was told it was never going to get a proper release. It did soon after, meaning every other DJ had it. I was spewing. I hate it when that happens.
Well, that's quite a record
store day
thing,
isn't it? When they tease you with
the
exclusivity and then mass release it. Talking of that, you know, we talked about that Renaissance empty box. They did that to me. They teased all these things about being, you know, this collector series and everything. And I remember the first one I bought from them, I looked on Discogs and I thought, Christ, that's gone up to £45. And then the next week they released the same record to every retailer in the country and it dropped to less than I paid for it. And when I called them out for that box, they deleted their tweet. So it took away my complaint and then just did their tweet again without my complaint. Oh, the cheek.
That's really genuinely shitty.
Yeah.
There may be another explanation, but I kind of don't imagine that there is. Wow. Ian Greaves, at Greaves Ian, says, I enthusiastically bought a bunch of Momus albums, thinking that they were by Matt Moss. I was too embarrassed to take them back. Ian, I'll take them off your hands. I like Momus.
Friend of the show, Stephen Green, says, I don't need to be pissed to buy crap.
And that's true, isn't it?
It's very true, yes.
Hasn't he got the exhaustive Don Estelle collection?
Exhaustive Don Estelle, yes.
JJJ Vinyl Record Shop says, I once woke to an email from Amazon saying, your order has been posted. 24 hours later, my copy of The Best of Fatboy Slim landed on my doormat. I've been sober for 30 months this week.
Friend of the show, Ian Walker. When I sell records on eBay, I always shifted the unshiftable stuff Saturday night between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m.
Yeah, of course you did.
Presumably to people drunk on eBay.
Definitely.
I once sold a whole pile of worthless 80s high concept soundtracks, Top Gun, Beverly Hills, Flashdance, about 25 quid's worth, to a bloke on a remote farm in County Tyrone. He bought them all at 3 a.m. on Saturday morning. I think he was probably in his cups.
I think he definitely was.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
That's a lovely expression as well, in his cups.
Martin Snelling simply says, I queued for record store day.
Boom, boom. Matt Jones says, I sold one of my favourite CDs to one of my best friends because his copy got stolen. I'm a good friend, but I'm still short of one CD.
Yeah, you can see what bothers him more, the guy's friendship or his poxy CD. Clearly, he's got a priority there, hasn't he? Stuart at Metalbox123 says, sold all my punk singles and albums for 18 quid in 1980. That, I mean, Jesus. I don't know, Paul, I know it's not your genre, but punk, original wave punk stuff is such a collectible genre.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm fully aware. I'm going to murder your name. I do apologise to Connie Rooney. I bought a Pink Floyd box set. I had most of it already and only really liked the stuff up to Metal anyway. Turned out to be a fake. After a mini war, I won and got my money back. I didn't learn my lesson. That's what most record buyers, they don't learn any lessons.
Paul Booth at the Mighty Booth, and I wonder if any of the listeners have had this experience. I have purchased stuff off eBay that I didn't want because it was going cheap, and I bumped the price up thinking that I'd get outbid. But we've all been there. You kind of think, okay, it's at 99p. I'll put on, you know, £1.20. Well, I'll put on £1.60. Well, all right, I'll go up to sort of, just to make sure I get it, I'll put £3.24 on it. And then some other swine also had the same idea, and then you end up paying three times what you wanted for something that you didn't really want in the first place. I'm afraid I've been there, Paul.
Ouch. I'm going to let you do the next one because I don't know this album, but I think you may well do, from Steve Flynn.
Yeah, so Steve says, not under the influence, I was at school. So we can say having a stupid child's brain is kind of the equivalent of being drunk, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Me and my mate, both fans of the Vertigo label, very collectible label, went halves on a reduced to 50p Dr. Z LP. We played it back at his place to decide who wanted it more. We thought it was shit and smashed it to bits laughing. I wonder what its current value is. And then you and I, Paul, got back to him and said that it's worth at least £1,000 on Discogs, possibly more if it was in really good nick.
Yep.
And he replied, ah, yes, it was that, and I claim my prize of twat of the 70s. I have no idea what the co-op in Dartford were doing stocking it, but nobody was buying it, thus the reduction to half a quid.
It's like the Danny Baker TV drama from the 70s where he's got he highlights the David Bowie album. He goes, oh, it's only worth 50p, and it flashes up on the screen. The eBay value now 1,500 quid.
Steve finishes off by saying, I'm starting to think that maybe I'm glad we did it, as I do enjoy telling the tale. What's a grand or two when you've got your memories?
Indeed.
Well, I would like the grand. I think I'd like the grand. Is that not...
Mike C, Dubhead77 on Twitter, I bought a Bucks Fizz single one Christmas Eve whilst on the sesh.
Fucking hell.
How much on the sesh would you have to be
very,
to get into
very... Which Bucks? Was it one of the later ones that didn't even chart, I wonder?
Oh, I hope so.
This is one of my favourites. Colin McQueen writes, under the influence of digital music in about 2004, I sold a stack of about 150 punk and post-punk 7-inches, as we said before, very collectible genre. Thinking that I'd never spin these again. I spent the money on a Clash tattoo so that I'd have a memory from them, but I think I'd like to have them back.
Yeah.
He spent the money on a Clash tattoo.
Sorry.
That's incredible. No, but I mean, but how amazing is that? Flog your record collection to get a tattoo to remember your record collection. We do get some funny listeners, don't we?
We do.
I think that's absolutely brilliant. We'll just squeeze in one more. John Tunbridge says, got the decimal place in the wrong place and bid £170 for Deep Purple in Rock on eBay. Went to bed, woke up much refreshed, checked eBay and managed to cancel the bid in time.
Cool.
Bloody hell.
Thank you, everyone. There's so many replies. I'm really sorry if we didn't get to read yours out.
But you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
with that in mind of getting listeners to generate half of our content for us,
yep.
Someone in the shop the other day, Paul, said to us, we were talking about static on records and how you might get a new record, slit the shrink wrap, pull it out, put it on, and just doing that has already generated static electricity, which is then going to sit on the record and suck dust onto it.
Okay.
And this guy in the shop said, you want to get a spider plant. Now he says, and I haven't bothered to check if it's true or not, putting a spider plant by your record player zaps static electricity and prevents it from building up. And it got me thinking, what other old wives' tales or bits of weird science do people know about records, record storage, record playing, cleaning your stylus? Because there must be all kinds of weird things that people either do because they just think that they're right and they're not, or incredible things that you wouldn't think are true but actually are. So I'd like to throw this over. And I don't know if, Paul, if you've got any thoughts off the hoof. You probably don't.
No.
Fine. Listeners, that I just said.
Spider plant?
Yeah, apparently. You've not heard of that, have you?
No.
Could be true. Not going to bother to research it.
Mate, I wash my 12 inches in the sink, so what do I know?
Paul, I think we've just about got time for a quiz, haven't we? Have you got a quiz?
Got a little quiz this week. Mr. David Bowie.
Yes.
I've been having a dig through some of his records that have sold in the past,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to give you the value of one of them, and then each record after that, you need to tell me whether it sold for more or less than the previous record.
Easy.
You reckon?
Yeah. I know my Bowie onions, or bunions, as I call them.
Mm-hmm. So we'll start off with this. Sorry, this is this week's quiz. We'll start off with this. David Bowie, The Next Day.
Yes.
Super Rare Limited UNICEF Blue Vinyl LP.
Yes.
New and sealed, 30th of September 2019. It sold for £3,755.
Seems legit.
Okay. David Bowie,
mm-hmm.
Scary Monsters, UK RCA Purple Vinyl LP. 17th of October 2004 this sold. Did that sell for more or less than the UNICEF Blue Vinyl?
Well, I'll preface this by saying that when I'm looking on PopPsych, which mm-hmm. is a website that aggregates historical eBay sales of
yep.
vinyl, there's a quite a common thing, which is that when you go back a little bit further in time, you get more stupidly high selling prices. And I've seen things that are rare, and if you go back to 10, 15 years ago sales, they were selling for £100, they're now selling for £30 or £40. So with that in mind, I reckon it sold for quite a lot, but I reckon it was less than the UNICEF disc.
It was a little bit less. It was £3,100.
Okay, I mean, I still didn't think it was going to be that much.
Okay, and that was back in... And he was alive.
He was alive then, wasn't he?
Yes. Station to Station.
Good album. Very, very, very good album.
1976 Acetate, the Master Lacquer Dub Test Pressing. It was sold 26th of October
yes.
2016. Now, did that sell for more or less than the Purple Vinyl Scary Monsters?
It should be more, because that is more of a one-off collectible, and it's an amazing... More.
It's less. It sold for £2,961.
Oh, these are all very... Are they all going to be within £20 of each other, Paul?
No. Rareza del Espacio.
I beg your pardon?
Rareza del Espacio.
How many times can I get you to repeat that? What was it? What did you say?
Rareza del Espacio.
Okay, that'll do.
Unplayed 7-inch promo.
What is that? What?
1973 from Peru.
What's it called again?
Rareza del Espacio. Or is that Rareza del Espacio? It's a 7-inch single.
Okay.
On promo from Peru. Did it sell for more? And that sold on the 4th of October 2017. Did it sell for more or less than the £2,961?
It has to be less. Has to be.
It is less, but only £1 less.
For God's sake.
You got it right.
A win's a win.
Peter and the Wolf.
Yes.
Japan vinyl import with the Eugene Ormandy Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sold on the 6th of February 2013. Did that sell for more or less than the Peruvian 7-inch promo?
Well, the big question surely is, did it have an obby?
I think that's neither here nor there.
Oh, what? It has to be less.
Sold for £10,000, so it's more, so you get it wrong.
£10,000.
That is the highest David Bowie item on PopPsych when ordered by value. And I did check to see if anyone had actually bid on it and it wasn't fake. And it had like 23 bidders. Who knows?
Okay, that's... Wow.
Ziggy Stardust.
Yep.
Demo. Acetate. 10-inch on RCA. Now, I've already kind of given it away because I told you that's the most expensive one.
That's true. So I kind of get an automatic point. Yes. So, less.
Yes.
But I guess that went for a lot of money. So that might have gone for, say, £5,000.
£2,150. Starman.
I still got it right, though, Paul.
Yep. 7-inch.
Yep.
From Angola.
Wow.
Wow. Now, did Starman from Angola go for more or less than the Ziggy Stardust acetate? Which was, so it's £2,150. The Angolan pressing was sold back in 2008.
You see, yeah, things can go weird when you go back a bit more in time. I think that sold for less.
It did sell for less, £25 less, in fact. 2025.
Wow.
So, David Bowie, Rebel, from Mexico. 7-inch picture sleeve, which they've listed as the Holy Grail in VG+. That sold.
Is it impossible to find?
Could be impossible to find. That sold on the 4th of November 2018. Now, did that sell for more or less than the Angolan Starman? Mexican Rebel, Angolan Starman.
I think the Mexican Rebel sold for less.
It did sell for less.
Was it a penny less?
It wasn't a penny less. It was £16 less. David Bowie. Santa Monica 1972, 2LP set. That sold on the 10th of June 2010.
Okay. Now,
did that go for more or less than the Mexican Rebel 7-inch?
Just from it being 2010, I'm going to say more.
It went for less. It went for £12.
Oh, yeah. Now I sound like a fucking idiot.
Last one. Mr. David Bowie, Space Oddity, 1972, RCA first press. Now,
what, more or less than
£12?
Did that
go for more or less than £12? It sold on the 24th of February 2017.
Let's say more.
It was less. It sold for £11.
It's probably a broken in half copy, though, isn't it?
I did kind of stitch you up on those last two because I knew you'd get them wrong. But you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 right and 1, 2, 3, 4 wrong. So you got more right than you got wrong. And it was a bit of
fun. I'm very much in the... I feel I'm in the position of the Brexiteers. Because it was a kind of a 50-50 split, but I just so happened to just be over, and now that makes me officially the winner of everything.
That Peter and the Wolf thing was weird, because it just didn't... It looked quite common. It didn't look like it should be that much.
Yeah, I've not even seen that. I think I know that it exists. I think I've heard of it, but I can't understand why it would be
We need a Bowie expert to clarify that.
Or Bexpert.
That's it for this week, Tim. Next time, we've got our first birthday coming up.
It's exciting, isn't it? I know. It's gone quick.
I know it's gone quick. We are, I think, going to be doing a radio takeover again, so that'll be fun. That was good fun last time. And this time,
super good fun.
I won't be picking tracks on the show. I'm going to be freestyling.
Because I ignored the remit last time.
You did, yes.
Listeners that want to hear who haven't heard the first edition, if you Google Radio Free Matlock, We Buy Records, and there's a two-hour show of us playing weird music and talking about it.
Yep. We'll have a special show for our first birthday. I'm sure we'll have some competition prizes and stuff, so I'm really looking forward to that. But yeah, join us next time for more adventures in vinyl on We
Buy
Records.
Previously on the We Made This Network. Make It So, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Even though it's not his ship and it's not his place, he's hired Rios to be a captain. And it's the fact that he can't remove that. But Rios is also not annoyed at him because the suggestions he makes are fine. It's like, open a channel. It's like, yeah, just open a channel. What he said, that's like, you know, so I like that. And visually, it was really great. And you don't really get to see those kind of maneuvers happen a lot in Star Trek with these kind of smaller ships. Some might say it's a bit Star Wars. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, personally. You get a small ship maneuvering in a vacuum, fine. and the Defence Net was a nice little addition to, we've got this other piece of danger on the other side here, and we have to be aware of it being shot at from other angles. And Rios's Spanish hologram was quite funny, the fact that he just gave up on firing weapons because it was, you know, mathematically pointless. Yeah. This was quite a nice touch.
Yeah, I did like that.
The Time Is Now, a Millennium podcast.
Even in season one, there were moments and there were hints, I think, that
I think there was
that Jordan, there was maybe more to this with Jordan, but and this season has had those moments as well, but this is the one that sort of explicitly puts it out there that she may end up becoming, if not becoming Frank, then maybe even becoming Lara Meads or becoming her grandmother. You know, and this is the thing. It sort of puts all these people into play. I think the fact it has Lara in it, even for just a couple of scenes, again adds that extra perspective.
The Muscles from Brussels.
It's very, very bizarre. He's got some very sadistic undertones to him, because we see it throughout the film that whenever he gets the opportunity to take someone down or hunt someone or something, He just loves it and takes a lot of pleasure in it.
Definitely. I mean, it's almost like a sort of a psychosexual thing, you know. It's
yeah.
It's like, oof, you really... Yeah, it's quite disturbing. And you kind of, for me, I never know who's worse, if it's Pick or Fu Show. I think, you know, they're both pretty disgusting.
Check out all of these shows on the We Made This podcast network.